Well, Mrs. Speaker, you mentioned earlier, you know, what took place during the course of Vice President Agnew's resigning and opening up a whole new kind of set of things we would have to deal with when we ultimately then chose our former leader on our side, Jerry Ford, to become the new vice president, because we were without a vice president and we needed one. And boy, then when things unfolded with respect to President Nixon himself, why, then
suddenly,
of course,
we
had someone to fall back on, and that was our former leader in the House, Jerry Ford. And boy, those were very momentous days, I remember.
I'll tell you another high emotion point for me, Bob. You may remember that when Jerry Ford, with whom we had served, of course, both parties, and in those days you got to know members that we've talked about, we were in the I was in the Democratic cloakroom when we were watching on television the oath of office being administered to President Ford. And there wasn't any Republican within 50 yards or 60 yards or whatever. We were all alone. And President Ford, in part of his address after he was sworn in, asked the country to pray for him. So there was an absolute dead silence in the Democratic cloakroom. Couldn't hear, you could hear a pin drop. And a single voice from the back of the cloakroom said, "We will, Jerry. God bless you." I'm not sure that could happen today in the same way, because there was this sense that Jerry Ford was from the House of Representatives. He was becoming the President of the United States, somebody with whom we had served, for whom we had respect. And it was one of those, again, high emotional moments that I think everybody who was in that cloakroom that day will remember.
Oh, I can fully appreciate that, Tom, because Corinne and I were fortunate then, of course, that day to be there in the East Room witnessing that swearing in of President Ford, and when he made the repeated quote, you know, "Our long nightmare of Watergate is over," you know, and then, of course, then he ultimately, I think, probably lost his election against Jimmy Carter because he pardoned President Nixon. Of course, there were other factors involved, but that was...
I think in Profiles in Courage, when the new one is written, this will be considered one of the acts of great political courage and great service to the country when Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. He brought an era of confusion and anguish in our constitutional system to an end, and I think he was right to do it. But he may, at least partially, if not wholly, paid for it with his office. That's the highest kind of calling, I think, for any public official. If he or she is willing to do what they think and believe deeply is the best thing for the country and put aside their own personal political future. It's not often that it happens because you know, there are few issues where members really feel so intensely about it that they're willing to lay the office on the line. But I think that's one where he did, and I've always had.
I think one of my most treasured exchanges of correspondence with presidents, for me, was post Nixon. Resignation. I was there that night in the cabinet room when he just before he made his broadcast, you know, and there were as many Democrats as Republicans, Southern ones, of course, at that time, Eastland and Dick Eichhardt, Tiger Teague, members like that, you know, and I had press, there was no press coverage of that, and I had presence of mind to pull out an envelope in my pocket and just write a few notes so that next day I could maybe flesh them out, you know, and I called it "A Room Full of Tears." And it was a very, very emotional kind of meeting. And then, of course, ultimately, I got back in touch with President Nixon, you know, and asked him to come back to the Republican caucus to speak. He had a great gift for, he always kept himself well informed on foreign affairs. I'd have to say that, but with all his faults and problems, you know, that he was a very gifted individual and very lawyerly like you, Tom, in his organization. Mm-hmm. Intro, body, conclusion, 1A, 2, you know. And but those exchanges of handwritten letters, now back in the old Dirksen Leadership Center, are very telling. And he conceded that my account of that evening to his recollection was pretty much on target, and enjoyed.
I had an unusual privilege of having a very private dinner with President Nixon after he had left office.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine, Don Kendall, who was then CEO of PepsiCo,
right,
had been a close friend of the president's, and asked me if I would be interested in having dinner with him. And I was then speaker. This was 1991, and I said, "Surely I'd be interested in that." Anyway, we went to his home in New Jersey. He had given up the Secret Service, was living with his wife Pam in a very handsome townhouse, one of these gated communities. And anyway, we went to the house and went up to the top floor, which had a large library, single room, very beautiful room. And we had glass of wine before dinner. And the president, former president, wasn't drinking anything, but he poured the wine for Don and for me. And then autographed the bottle, the half-empty bottle, and gave it to me. Unfortunately, our housekeeper threw it out 2 days later, thinking it was partially used wine. But we went down to the second floor where the dining room is. Mrs. Nixon had a slight stroke, and she was not at dinner. And she was recovered, but she mm-hmm. was... Anyway, the only point of this story is that I agree with Bob. President Nixon always had a unique grasp of foreign policy, one of the most knowledgeable of all American presidents in recent years on foreign policy issues. What amazed me is how close he was following domestic affairs. We have a redistricting every 10 years, and I was treated that afternoon to a three-hour briefing by the person who knows more about congressional districting then and now than any other single person. He went over every one of the 435 districts until I was ready to surrender. Anyway, when the subject of redistricting came up at dinner, I was flabbergasted. I was absolutely amazed. I thought former President Nixon had been at the briefing. I have a pretty good short-term memory. I forget things after a while, but right after an event, I can recall it pretty well. And he was dead right, I mean, at least according to the expert that was right. briefing me, on dozens and dozens and dozens of close races in the country. So he obviously followed it very, very carefully. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of his own mental abilities, he was one of the brightest presidents in modern times. Mm-hmm. And particularly, as you say, in foreign policy areas, and such things as the opening to China and so on, were historic actions which were taken in his administration. He also advanced a series of important social programs, which people don't pay too much attention to today, but they exist, they're very important. They don't pay attention to the fact they were started in the Nixon administration.
Right.